Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour, hosted by Joe Parks. My name's Elaine, and I'm your event manager. During the presentation, your lines will remain on listen only. If you require assistance at any time, please key *0 on your telephone, and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. I'd like to advise all parties this conference is being recorded for replay purposes. And now I'd like to hand over to Joe. Please go ahead.
Hi everyone, so welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour today. My name's Joe Parks, I'm a senior asset engineer in the structures team based at Waterloo. So I'll run through the standard safety hour material that's available on the website now. So last week the safety hour attendance was 72%, which is pretty good, so hopefully we'll get another good week this week. I don't have the close call numbers for last week yet, but hopefully they'll be updated in the next few days so you can see those. And now I'll just run through the incidents that have happened this week. So I'll run through the incidents for this week, and then there's a safety bulletin. There's another update from Home Safe, and then I'll talk a little bit more about what I do in the structures team and how the safety incidents on the structures team that might be relevant to yourselves, and how you could report some concerns that you have that might be helpful to us. So on to the incidents from this week. Got five of those. So starting on 22nd of March, first one was Southampton Central Station. S&T technician scalded the back of both hands and washing them under the tap. He ran them under cold water, but and put signs up to warn staff, turned down the thermostat. He did not think the scald would need medical attention, but would monitor it. So he's taken the action there to try and ensure that others don't suffer a similar injury. Moving on to the second incident, which is 23rd of March at Christchurch Station. an operative from Bournemouth T-Way, whilst barring some plates for a gauge fault, the bar slipped and hit him square on the nose. He sustained deep gash to the nose and drew a considerable amount of blood, but there was no absence from work anticipated, and the hospital, he did attend hospital for that injury. So I guess the lessons to be learnt from that is just to look at the working methods and try and prevent things like that happening if we're doing similar tasks again. The third incident I've got, so 24th of March, Motspur Park Station. 2M56 passed W410 signal at danger without authority due to a backlog of trains during a level crossing failure at Motspur Park. The driver thought the previous signal had displayed a yellow aspect, and a TPWS intervention brought the train to a stand half a coach past. There's just one to note. The fourth incident is Waterloo Station. The duty station manager reported an incident on the concourse with the mock-up of a 707 unit. The cab door became detached and narrowly missed a child. It says here, the exhibit was secured out of use. And upon investigation, it seems that the cab door had been hung on a temporary runners, and as the child slid the door, it fell. So it's quite an unusual one, that one. I did see the exhibit up in Waterloo train station. It looked really good, so it's a bit of a shame that it was a safety incident there. I guess it's just something to bear in mind when we're doing something a little bit different and showing displays to check them for the safety of the general public. The fifth safety incident I've got, 27th of March, at Waterloo. We had a member of P-Way working with a possession 153, item 1, injured his right foot when a fastening key sprung off and hit him. The strike caused swelling and bruising. First aid was given, and he also visited St Thomas's Hospital, and he's currently off duty, so that was a lost time injury. So it's just something to consider next time if anyone's using fastening keys, take the precautions. So that was the five incidents for this week that I had. I was then going to go on to the safety bulletin that's been sent out. So this relates to a serious near miss at Clapham Junction. So this one actually happened on Wessex Route. The date of the incident was 10th of March. So it says here, a four-man team were working within a line blockage at Clapham Junction on the downwinds of Fast. The COD has placed protection for the line blockage away from the group and began his track patrol for the commencement board. The remaining members of the team were performing bridge inspections further up the line. The gauge they were using then stopped working, so a blue hat member of the bridge inspection team was sent across four open lines to access the gauge that was working. So as he was coming back into the blocked lines, an empty passenger train, which is performing a shunt move across the Clapham ladder, approached the individual. The train was travelling at approximately 5 miles an hour. The blue hat member of staff acknowledged the oncoming train before crossing in front of its path. So there's a number of incidents here and discussion points. So what are the dangers of separating yourself from your working group? The other questions they've put there, why do you believe that a blue hat member of staff was delegated the responsibility of retrieving the gauge? I guess on reflection it would have been better to send a white hat or two people together, maybe the blue hat and a white hat together, to retrieve the gauge. Why do you think this is not challenged by anyone on site? Another question. I think it's quite easy to get stuck into the job in hand and sometimes doing something slightly different from the planned works. The risks don't always get evaluated before the action is taken and you just want to get the job done. So it's always worthwhile just taking a step back and thinking about the risks as we change the work that we're doing. Another discussion point on there is who is responsible for your safety? I guess that's particularly obvious in this instance when the COS was a little bit away from the group that were looking at the bridge. Another question, how are your access and egress points established? Just making sure there's clear understanding within the group of the safe routes. And then another discussion point, why might the member of staff have chosen to cross open lines to access the blocked line rather than using the available access? Obviously, we don't know the answer to that question. It might have been just, it was a lot easier, shorter walking route. Could be if they were a blue hat, they just weren't yet educated and perhaps they didn't have that good understanding of how the railways work. Yeah. So that was the safety bulletin that I had for this week. And then another item that I've got is a home safe briefing. So this comes from Infrastructure Projects Southern, and it just details some of the safety incidents that infrastructure projects have had whilst delivering some of their bigger renewal schemes across the network. So these are not just Wessex, but it's other southern routes as well. So the first item on the Home Safe briefing, dated the 23rd of March, is driving. There's quite a serious road accident. So it says driving is the most dangerous work activity that most people do. It's estimated around 150 people are killed or seriously injured every week in crashes involving someone who is driving, riding, or otherwise using the road for work purposes. The majority of these tragedies could be prevented. And it's quite a good coincidence because driving and safe driving is quite a big focus in the safety workshops that are going on at the moment. So in this instance, a gang of operatives were returning from a night shift at Margate when the flatbed van they were travelling in lost control on the roundabout, colliding with a safety barrier. Fortunately, all of the operatives were wearing seatbelts and only one person had to go to hospital as a precaution. Reports suggest that the van skidded on some oil or diesel at the roundabout and the vehicle was not carrying a load, it spun quite easily. Initial indications suggest that fatigue was not a factor. However, the men had just completed night shift and it's not known how much rest they had had on the day leading up to the shift. So it's always worth remembering the life-saving rules here. Always obey the speed limit and always wear a seatbelt. And the other thing is just not to drive if you're tired or fatigued. If there's a number of you in a group, you know, try and find someone else who's better suited to drive in, or take a break, or just don't start the journey. Make the decision from the start. So another incident on the Home Safe Bulletin was relating to hypodermic needles. So last week, an operative at South Bermondsey was pricked by a discarded needle that was underneath a metal plate he was picking up. The operative attended hospital as a precaution. So it's just worth being aware of hypodermic needles, common places where you're going to find them. Certainly within the structures team, quite a lot of our examiners are quite aware of the risk posed by hypodermic needles. They can quite often be discarded at bridge locations and they can be found in the bearing shelves of bridges as well. So next point in this safety, home safe briefing, was a number of incidents that Crossrail have experienced. So it's worth just learning from these and seeing if we can make any improvements on our home routes as a result. So some of the most serious incidents include an operative becoming trapped between a telehandler and a flatbed truck, resulting in multiple fractures. Another operative was drilling into concrete with a masonry drill and his glove got caught in the rotating drill bit, resulting in amputation of the tip of the finger. And an R&D soldier hit an operative, causing a break to his right wrist and the tip of the third finger. So the lost time injury frequency rate in Southern Region, it says here it's continued to improve, but we need to learn and continue to keep improving from these incidents. It's just worth stating that although this Home Safe document says the lost time frequency rate is improving across the Southern Region, I believe that relates just to infrastructure projects, and if we were to look specifically at Wessex, we're not in a good place in terms of the lost time injuries, and we're incurring quite a lot of those at the minute. So there's another relevant point on the Home Safe document about wearing the correct eye protection. It's been quite a drive fairly recently for everyone to start wearing eye protection. But it's now been observed that site operatives have been undertaking activities where task-specific eye protection is required, but operatives have only been wearing safety glasses suitable for general protection. So it's essential that correct glasses are selected for a specific task being undertaken. Glasses must have required impact resistance for the task, and the risk assessment should determine if a face shield, goggles or glasses are appropriate. There's a life-saving rule covering that, and just always use equipment that's fit for its intended purpose. So that's the end of the Home Safe summary that's come out from IP Wessex. Just logging back into the website for the next details. So other risks this week, weather is quite a big one. Obviously we had Storm Katie came through at the weekend, causing quite a lot of disruption across the routes, particularly on Sunday, but I know the Earthworks team was also struggling with that one yesterday, some landslips. But please be extra vigilant when driving on track and generally out and about. And then the fifth point for the Wessex Safety Hour is to all remember to submit personal safety action plans. They need to be done for all bands 1 to 5. And there was an email last week which I think came from, oh, I just checked who that came from, but there's a new website that we need to log into for our safety plans rather than the Excel documents that were circulated initially. So that's the safety hour material that I have to go through. What I'll do now is just talk a little bit more about the structures team, what we do, and some of the incidents that are relevant to yourselves. So just to repeat my name, it's incorrect in the safety hour email, but my name's Jo Parkes, which is P-A-R-K-E-S, and my email address is Joanne, J-O-A-N-N-E dot Parkes, P-A-R-K-E-S, at networkrail.co.uk. So if there are any questions or any safety concerns that you had relating to our structures, do drop me an email. We also have a general email address for the structures team, which is Civils Inquiries Wessex. You can look that up on the Outlook, Civils Inquiries Wessex, or one word. We're only a relatively small team, so sometimes you do get a little bit overwhelmed with emails. I'm a senior asset engineer in the structures team. I'm based at Waterloo, and the team is headed up by the RAM, the Route Asset Manager, David Caslow. We've got four senior asset engineers and four asset engineers based in Waterloo and a few in Basingstoke as well. We are responsible for managing all of the underbridges across the route, so it's almost 1,200 of those. We manage the overbridges, which are carrying roads over the railway, the footbridges, culverts, and retaining walls. The assets are normally examined by an external company called AMI, but we do have a couple of internal examiners at the moment who go out and examine the assets. And the assets can be examined on, so visually, every asset is looked at once a year, but then we do a touching distance detailed exam less frequently, which can be every 6 years, or on some sort of masonry arches, it might be once every 18 years that we're looking at them on a detailed basis. But everything's looked at visually once a year. Within the structures team, we also have our own minor works team, and they go out and address any smaller sort of work items that are needed to keep the bridges to extend their life until the next major intervention by IP, which might be a renewal or a big refurbishment. So my role within the structures team, so on the renewals and enhancements engineer, so I look at the highest risk assets and identify trends in assets that have had defects or close calls raised against them. And I try to identify similar assets and ensure that we're managing them in a safe manner, and also ensure that we're timing interventions on those assets so that we're managing the risk pose as low as possible. So there's a couple of incidents I just wanted to talk about that are particularly relevant to the structures team that we might benefit from input from those that other people are out on the route feeding back some more information. So the first one was we've had quite a few concerns recently with signposts, lamp posts, and signal posts. The first one is in Berwick on 5th of December 2015. It was after Storm Desmond. It was a large placard outside the station, fell over and actually killed someone. It's a little bit of a grey area as to who's responsible for that sign. It was outside the station building. It's not clear if it was Network Rail's responsibility or the TOC's responsibility. But the sign on that lamppost had recently been replaced, but the lamppost base had not been replaced, and obviously it had not been designed correctly. Because it fell over in high winds and killed someone, which is obviously something you want to avoid at all costs. So I think it's just a point that if anyone's got any concerns with any lamp posts or signal posts, if they look like they're in poor condition or if they're showing excessive movement during high winds, then by all means report them into us, and we'll just try and ensure that we can check they're on our register of assets, and we can also check they've been reviewed and that we're monitoring them and that we're happy with the risk that's being carried. Then there was a little bit more recently, there was another incident involving the lighting column at Swinton, where the light column was lowered for maintenance and it struck a member of the public on the head. They were actually okay, but there was clearly a fault in the asset that was being lowered and also the safe process being used to ensure that it could be lowered within a clear area where there were no members of the public in that area. So there's a few lessons to be learnt there as well. And then, I'm not sure if more people are aware of these, but there have been two signal posts that actually fell over on the western route close to Newbury. These are both, I think, they definitely took place in 2015, I think in the autumn of 2015. One of those was struck by a train. The other one, I don't think it was hit by a train, but obviously it's the type of incident we want to avoid happening. On Wessex, was following those two incidents, we've undertaken a review of the signal posts, older signal posts, and those that proved to be a higher risk asset. We've done site visits and dug out the bases to assure ourselves that we're not carrying any risk with those assets. But if anyone's got any concerns about any signal posts, then it'd be worthwhile just flagging those up. The particular problem with those in western routes was that the bases of the posts were buried in ballast. So it meant that the ballast, not only did it help to hold water against the signal post, it also meant it obstructed the base. So you could, a good examination of the asset couldn't be completed. So the high risk sort of assets would be any old lighting columns, telecoms columns. They might be on the platforms or in a depot, and signal gantries as well. So any assets that are obstructed at the base, if they look like they're corroded or in poor condition, and particularly if they're showing excessive movement in high wind weather, then be worth pointing them out. Although we do have an exam regime in place, just sometimes some of these things slip through the net. And it's hollow sections that are particularly at risk for these. So signal posts where they are a circular hollow section, it's only a thin element, so there's only a small amount of material needs to be lost to corrosion before posts are quite prone to give way and fall over. The exam regime, so we've already been out on Wessex to examine our high priority assets and we feel we're in a reasonable place, but the exam regime is about to be improved because the AMI examiners were also to blame for the two assets that fell over on Western routes. The assets had only been examined from a couple of tracks away from the asset, they haven't actually been examined from touching distance, so the exam regime is going to be improved and Amy are on board with making some changes there as well. So that's what I wanted to talk about for signal posts and for columns. And then I just need to touch quite quickly on another safety incident, which happened a little while ago now, but it's still worth just mentioning it. So this was 1st of August 2013 at Denmark Hill Station, so it's not on the Wessex route, it was on the old Kent route. There was an old wrought iron bridge passing over the platform, and the bottom flange of that bridge was encased in concrete, and quite suddenly on a sunny day in August a large chunk of concrete fell down onto the platform. So again, on the Wessex route we've done a review of all of the wrought iron bridges that have got any concrete encasements, and we've gone out and tapped that concrete, and we've removed it where we've needed to ensure that it's good and sound and solid. But there's always an opportunity, there's always a chance that some of these assets have fallen through the net. And so if anyone out there walking along the tracks sees any assets, particularly concrete, encased concrete or reinforced concrete, if the material looks loose or fractured, it would be worth just letting us know, and we can just let you know if it's already on our radar or not. Any debris that could fall onto the platform or onto the tracks is just a situation that we want to avoid at all costs. So yeah, just to refresh my email address, it's joanne.parkes, joanne.parkes, P-A-R-K-E-S, at networkcrowd.co.uk. That's all I had for the safety hour for today. I'll hand back to Elaine, and then if anyone's got any questions, I'll attempt to answer them.
Thank you. So ladies and gentlemen, your question and answer session will now begin. If you wish to ask a question, please key star then one on your telephone, record your name, and press the hash key. If you then decide to withdraw your question, simply key star two. All questions will be answered in the order received, and you'll be advised when to ask your question. All other lines will remain on listen only. So just to remind you, if you wish to ask a question, please key star then one on your telephone, record your name, and press the hash key. We do have a question, which comes from the line of
Chris.
Please go ahead, Chris, you're live in the call.
Oh, hello. Bridges, brick bridges, why do they allow the buddleia and the small trees to carry on growing out the side? In many cases, it's beginning to loosen things like coping stones, which eventually will cause a hazard. But nobody seems to bother with it.
Yes, no, it's a very valid point, and you see it all across the routes. There's a couple of different programs that we've got to remove vegetation. We have to remove vegetation from the bridges in order to do the detailed exams to see what's actually happening underneath the vegetation. And quite often, that process, because we need to just remove the vegetation quite quickly to get the exam done, it just removes the superficial vegetation that can be seen, but it doesn't actually go as far as to take the roots out. And we're actually working on making some improvements to that process so that we can be a bit more efficient and make sure that we are taking out roots as much as possible. The problem is, I have seen on some assets where we do try and take the roots out, is that you can almost end up rebuilding parts, large parts of the bridge in order to get all of the roots out. So it's not an easy feat, and it actually can cause quite extensive reconstruction works are required as a result of that. It certainly is the right thing to do, and we want to be going in that direction where we're taking the roots out and reducing the amount of vegetation that's growing once and for all, but it's not easily done.
Right. Okay, I have a second observation question. On the at Blackwater Station on the GTW2, where there's a 1930s bridge which takes the A30, I think it is, over the railway, lumps of concrete have been falling off of that for quite some time. I reported it years ago, but because we never get any feedback, we don't know whether anybody's taking any notice. Nothing actually seems to be being done about it.
Oh, okay. So I don't know that asset off the top of my head straight off, but if I can take your email address, what I'll do, I'll definitely be interested. I'll look that up. We've got a database of the bridges that we have looked at. It could be that someone's been there, they've taken off the loose bits, and we feel that it's safe for another few years until we go back and use a bit more. There was a bridge in the last few months where we've removed extensive amount of concrete, removed all of the bottom flange concrete from the whole asset. And again, there is quite a high cost associated with doing that, but where it's the right thing to be done, that's what we have to do. Sometimes it's better for us to just remove the loose bits and to keep going back and keep tapping every 3 years or something like that. But yeah, if I can have your email address, and then I will check it on our database. I'll make sure that we're looking at that and monitoring it, and I'll add it to the list of bridges that we need to do an additional examination on.
Okay, I'll email you. I'll send you an email then. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. No further questions at the moment, but just to remind everybody, please key star then one on your telephone, record your name, and press the hash key if you wish to ask a question. We have another question, which comes from the line of...
Mark Johnson.
Please go ahead, Mark. You're live in the call.
Yeah, good afternoon. It's just, I want to raise a point. I'm a section manager based at State S&T. Trying to get the message across about close calls. My guys are losing the sight of what close calls was actually originated for due to the volume of non-common sense close calls that are raised. And an example I'll give you is, my guys were doing a fault investigation inside a location case and were reported by a passenger on a train, I'm assuming it was Network Rail, for not wearing safety glasses.
Yeah, okay. So have they been able to respond back to that close call? Or?
Yeah, I've responded.
Yeah.
So some of these close calls, some of these silly close calls that are being raised are causing more work, and they're actually detracting from what the close call system was originated for.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I guess that's a risk with any sort of system like this, is that there is an element of having to deal with sort of the repeats and the sort of less significant items. But I guess it's all part of the bigger picture, isn't it? But by catching all of the concerns that people have, we can make sure that something that might be small to one person can be quite a big risk to someone else. I think it just gives us an opportunity to try and increase everyone's awareness of safety at all times when they're doing our work. I think it also gives us a chance to monitor trends and to try and predict where there's going to be a next sort of failure or another concern, and just take proactive action. I can understand your concern about it taking admin time in just replying. You're not alone. In the structures team, we get quite a few that we also feel don't require work, or we struggle to identify the work that needs to be done. But I think all in all, the close call system is a good idea, and by getting everyone to report safety concerns, however big or small, we're going to make improvements.
I don't disagree. The close call system, I think, is a very good system, and it's very effective. The problem we're having with these inane reports is that you're going to switch the guys off, and you're actually going to defeat the object of the close call system.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. Yeah. Well, hopefully that same person that's reported like that concern that you're not worried about, hopefully they'll just report it once, and once they see it's been closed, they'll sort of move on to something else. I think there'll be a point where we start to raise our game and it's higher risk stuff that starts to come through. Are you still there? I'm not sure. Okay.
No, thanks for that.
Thank you for the question. No further questions at the moment.
Okay, that sounds like there's no further questions. So thank you very much for your time, everyone. And don't hesitate to get in touch if you've got any concerns relating to the structures. And thanks for your time.
Thank you, Joe. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes your call for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you for joining, and enjoy the rest of your day.